Modern environmentalism and Christianity don't mix. That's the message of a new DVD series from the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, which shines a light on the underpinnings and background of the modern environmental movement.
The most common concept of God in environmental circles, environmentalist movement circles, is either, on the one hand, the atheistic perspective of secularism, where there is no God, or, on the other hand, the pantheistic perspective of Eastern mysticism.
It's Cornwall Alliance founder Dr. E. Calvin Beisner. The 12-part DVD series is called Resisting the Green Dragon. The Louisiana Board of Elementary and Secondary Education has rejected the concerns of many parents and approved science textbooks that teach evolution only. Candy Cushman, a Focus on the Family's Citizen Link, says, quote, evidence for intelligent design should not be censored simply because it could lead to someone concluding there is a God. This is SRN News. One California woman is proving it's never too late to make things right.
95-year-old Hazel Severson of Sacramento says a friend who was sorting through some things for a garage sale found a book that Severson's late husband had borrowed from a library in 1936. She knew what she had to do, return the book and offer to pay the overdue fee, a whopping $2,700.
SRN's Rich Thomason says the library did not charge her the fee. It did accept a small donation, however. Independent groups that do not disclose the identity of their donors spent $132.5 million to influence the latest election, about a third of all spending by outside groups. That's according to a new report released by the New York City public advocate Bill de Blasio on the impact of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision. It allows corporations and unions to spend unlimited and anonymous funds to influence federal campaigns. More details at SRNnews.com.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we're tackling hepatitis A with guest expert, infectious disease specialist Dr. Daniel Haight of the USF College of Medicine in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with over 1,000 women during each of our last two events, and a combined 7,500 hours of education on those 2 days, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced cost of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives every week and protect families every week through the immediate impact of Direct with the Expert health education. And it's interesting because just this week in the New England Journal of Medicine is a perspective editorial about improving Americans' health literacy or putting information in the hands of the public in a way that it's usable. And of course, we've been doing this now going on our sixth year, and perhaps our programs are something that should be broadened across the country, bringing our health symposium across the country. Of course, our show today streams live online. So there are opportunities to reach out to willing physicians, experts that are on the show and at the symposium to have your questions answered, to identify breakthroughs, to make a difference in your life. And we encourage you to continue to do so. Now, additionally, a column that you should know about that I write every couple of months that does appear in the Tampa Bay Women's Newspaper. Column is about a case study of a woman or a man who has had medical issues that have come to us, and we've been able to identify some help for that person. Recommend you take a look at it. Tampa Bay Women's Newspaper, it's a free newspaper, found at over 3,000 Tampa Bay area locations, such as medical offices, health clubs, banks, specialty organic grocery stores, and so forth. The articles are educational, informational, and resourceful, and also has a list of upcoming radio shows on Sundays. So at this point, I'd like to introduce to you my guest expert today, who is Dr. Daniel Haight. And Dan, nice to have you here.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. So Dr. Daniel Haight has served as the director of the Polk County Health Department since 1996. He is board certified in internal medicine and infectious disease and holds the position of associate professor of medicine at the University of South Florida College of Medicine's Division of Infectious Disease and International Medicine. He's on staff at Tampa General Hospital and is a fellow of the American Academy of Internal Medicine. And with that introduction, again, I invite you to call in with questions. Now, the focus of today's show is on hepatitis A, but as you can tell by listening to the introduction, Dr. Haight is an expert also on international medicine. So if you have a question about an upcoming trip or maybe a trip that you just came back on in regard to potential infectious disease, vaccines you should perhaps get before you go, this whole arena of questions and concerns, today would be a great time to call in with a question regarding these concepts, these concerns. And also, may I say that because we are talking about hepatitis A today, that introduces a whole range of potential transmissible infectious disease that one gets with foodborne illness. And again, there too, if you have a question about other foodborne illnesses besides hepatitis A, again, call in with your questions now, and we have the expert with me to answer those questions you have. The number to call is 289-1860, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Everywhere else is toll-free, 877-969-8600. Once again, Hillsborough County, 289-1860. So again, Dan, thanks for coming in on a rainy day in Tampa, although it's, 56 degrees outside, so it's not too cold, but it is wet, and I appreciate you being here.
Oh, it's warm in here, so this is
okay, hepatitis. Strictly speaking, hepatitis means what? Inflammation of the liver. What's the big fuss about hepatitis viruses?
Well, like you were saying, there are many causes of hepatitis. It just means that your liver is irritated, and that could be coming from many different things. You could have medicines cause hepatitis. Alcohol can cause hepatitis, but we're talking today about certain germs, and there can be bacteria and viruses that cause it. But specifically viruses, we have seen that there's some viruses out there. They name them by the alphabet, hepatitis A, B, C, D, E, F, and it goes on.
How many are there?
Well, there's those numbers that we see most commonly are hepatitis A, B, C, and D in this country. E and F we see in other countries.
And so it's a family of viruses.
Yes, and they're all slightly different. For example, hepatitis B and C and D are spread through blood and sex. And for example, hepatitis B, that stays with you lifelong. Although it may not cause problems lifelong, it can certainly stay with you lifelong. Hepatitis C it can be treated, but there are some challenges with that. Hepatitis A, the good thing about hepatitis A, once you get it, it can go away. You can get over it.
Okay. And before we go further, for those who don't understand the magnitude of a diagnosis such as hepatitis, what happens to you if you have hepatitis, unrecognized hepatitis virus, that is to say, untreated? What is the natural course of that disease?
Well, your liver is such an important organ to you. It makes things for you. It gets rid of things for you. So when it's not functioning perfectly, you know, that can lead to problems in the short term. And then as the liver gets irritated, it might actually become scarred and cause something called cirrhosis, where the liver just doesn't work. And again, many things can cause it, including these viruses.
Can a person live without a functional liver?
Absolutely not. And in fact, that's where it's one of the main causes of liver transplantation is actually hepatitis C virus, which is not the main topic today. Mm-hmm. But you know, these things can damage the liver over time.
So ultimately, if you have hepatitis A, B, or C, or any hepatitis virus, it's important to make the diagnosis, get treatment. It'll lead to your demise and death.
Well, and everybody's different. Some folks are able to do very well with a hepatitis B or hepatitis C infection. Some don't even need treatment. They sort of do fine on the others. But you really need to be in touch with your doctor, because sometimes those viruses can make you pretty sick, and there are some treatments out there. But, you know, for hepatitis A, for instance, it's caught a totally different way, and you can recover from that.
Okay. Let's talk more about hepatitis A then. Hepatitis A is normally transmitted in what way?
Well, it's different from hepatitis B and C. Those are passed through blood or sexual intercourse. Hepatitis A is different. It's sort of the what we call the fecal-oral route, meaning that the germ is in your bowel movements, and without proper hygiene or hand washing or good sanitary systems, if it gets into your food or water supply, it gets into your mouth. So it goes that route, and it's sounds gross, but that's how some germs spread from person to person. They go from the feces into the hands or the water or the food, and you get infected that way.
And then the virus goes right to the liver.
Yeah, it goes through the GI system, can spread through the blood in the body, and then ends up in the liver where it does its irritation.
Okay. And so this this brings up the whole notion of food preparation, the risk of food contamination. And I think we'll save that a little later because that's a much broader topic and very important topic. So the symptoms of hepatitis A, let's start there. Let's go back to that.
Well, that can be one of the frustrating issues, is that the time it takes from the moment you were exposed to when you first get these symptoms can be 30 days to 50 days. So you may not remember where you got exposed. But, you know, this is often an international disease. We don't see it as much here in the United States anymore, except in travelers and in a few small clusters. So you got that 30-day time where you feel fine and the germ is incubating in you. And then you get hit with malaise and fever, nausea, some belly pains. Because the liver is not working well, it can't get rid of bile. And so that builds up in your body and you start to turn a shade of yellow. And most folks will end up to the doctor with those kinds of symptoms, but what makes this disease a little challenging, the younger you are, the fewer symptoms you have. So especially children, and especially in other countries, they don't get that sick. It just seems a little fussy for a few days, but they're very infectious, whereas as you get older, you get pretty sick. And, of course, the older you are, the sicker you can get with this disease.
How long, you mentioned, if you get it, contract it when you're young, you can be very infectious with few symptoms. Someone with hepatitis A that's young, 5-6 years of age, for example, be a carrier for months on end?
No, fortunately, you get over this illness. But what makes it a challenge for everybody who gets hepatitis A is that you start shedding the virus in your bowel movements before you even get sick. Mm-hmm. And with those little kids, they don't get that sick, but they're shedding the virus in their bowel movements. So if you're changing a diaper, or if the children aren't washing their hands, they can certainly spread it to other kids and adults who haven't caught it. And then once you get it, it takes about a month for you to get over it. And at that point, you're not shedding it, you're cured of it. It's gone for good, and you're not going to catch it again. And that's important to know.
So are you saying then that most people are able to clear hepatitis A from their system without long-term damage to the liver.
Absolutely. And that's what makes hepatitis A different from hepatitis B and hepatitis C. Hepatitis B and C stay with you a long time. In fact, B stays with you your entire life. Hepatitis C, if you're successful with treatment, you might be able to get rid of it. But A, you get hepatitis A, you get rid of.
Without any treatment.
And there is no treatment other than rest, fluids, maybe if you're nauseated, something for the nausea. But there is no treatment for hepatitis A. And certainly being sick for a month is something you want to avoid, especially you don't want to catch it on a trip, on a vacation.
Mm-hmm. And so the significant point here is you can be a focal epicenter of disease, however, because by shedding the virus and sharing with other people in your world.
Right. And then what happens is it takes 30 days to 50 mm-hmm. days to cause the other people to get sick, and it can go on like that. But fortunately, this is a rare disease in the United States. We've seen almost a 92% decrease since the vaccine for hepatitis A came out.
Okay. And when did the vaccine come out?
That was in 1995, and right now it's recommended for children over the age of one or anybody else who already has a liver disease. So if you have hepatitis B or C and you already know it, make sure you get a hepatitis A vaccine. Or if you've had damage to the liver from alcohol, like you have cirrhosis of the liver, or you have another disease like lupus that causes liver, that could and you cause liver irritation, you'd want to have that. And then men who have sex with men are also advised to get the hepatitis A vaccine along with people who are traveling a lot.
And this vaccine is one time, or do you need a repeat booster?
It's given once and then repeated 6 months later. And it's especially folks who are traveling to other countries, because other countries are experiencing more hepatitis A than we are here in the United States. So this is good for travelers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we're going to take a quick break and come back with more. And again, the topics to call in with questions are not just hepatitis A, but questions on foodborne illnesses, as well as questions related to travel, what vaccines one may need to receive before their trip. Okay, we'll be back with more in a moment on Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Be right back.
Did you know that you can make a financial contribution for any amount to your favorite charity while preserving assets for your heirs? Many people just like you contribute money to their favorite charity, allowing them to qualify for a lower tax bracket. Right now, your donation can help someone in need while creating additional tax-free income for you and your heirs tomorrow. To learn more, call Robert and Chris Maggie at 800-499-6091. That's 800-499-6091 with offices in Palm Harbor, Lutz, and Wesley Chapel.
Amley and Amley Orthodontics, serving St. Pete in the Bay Area, gives you three reasons to smile. One, the unique Damon Clear bracket system for the image conscious, shaping smiles with less treatment time and discomfort. Two, providing Invisalign, the clear removable treatment alternative for adults and teenagers. And three, a plan to budget your cost of care. Orthodontics at its best. Call to schedule a complimentary orthodontic consultation at 727-381-1062. That's 727-381-1062 or online at amley-amley.com.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit FocusOnFemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
For the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show.
At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a Best Doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010, and as an America's Top Ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today we're talking about hepatitis A and other foodborne illnesses with our guest expert, Dr. Daniel Haight, who is the director of the Polk County Health Department and as well also is board certified in infectious disease and is with University of South Florida College of Medicine's Infectious Disease Division. So we're talking about a little bit about hepatitis A, and we were talking about the symptoms, the fact that you can get this disease and infection and disease for a month before to get over it. It takes a month to get over it once you get the disease. But during that time, you may not have a lot of symptoms, especially if you're young, and you can be spreading it in the meantime.
Yeah, little children tend not to get that sick. As you get more into the 15s, you know, the adolescent age, you tend to get, not feeling right. But, you know, the young adults, we get very sick, really very fatigued, eyes turn yellow, urine will get dark. And, you know, most folks will get to the bottom of it and get a diagnosis.
And I guess, you know, some of these symptoms are nonspecific, the malaise, not feeling well, fever. But once the whites of the eyes turn yellow and your skin starts changing, then it's pretty clear it's a liver problem.
Right. And then most physicians will look at, well, what could it be? Was it something related to an infection, or is there some other disease process? And they'll run the test to determine it. And unfortunately, it's rare, but, you know, we've had a handful of cases this year. In our county, we did have an outbreak back about 9 years ago, and we had 400 cases. You know, that's much higher than our usual 10 to 12 mm-hmm. a year. So this is usually a rare, but we did have a bit of an outbreak. But having that vaccine handy has really reduced the number of cases. And now we're mainly seeing cases from folks who travel overseas,
mm-hmm.
and they'll bring it back, and then they'll infect a few people that they're close to. Right. And usually it won't go beyond there.
Couple things. For the listeners, then, the diagnosis of hepatitis A is by blood test, correct?
Right, exactly. And you need a very straightforward blood test, and most physicians, you know, get that. And they'll also check for hepatitis B and C, because you can't tell by looking.
Mm-hmm. And talking about then the treatment, as you said, there's no specific treatment other than a vaccine. Now, if you've not been vaccinated before and it is determined that you have hepatitis A, you would recommend giving the vaccine at that time.
Well, if you already have the disease, you're going to be now protected, and you'd get the vaccine to those you've been close to. Right now, okay. we see a much larger problem in the world and the United States with hepatitis B and hepatitis C. And there's a vaccine for hepatitis B, mm-hmm. and it's required for school children. There is no vaccine for hepatitis C. There is a treatment, but it's not the easiest treatment to take. But those diseases are making many, many people ill, and you can walk around with those diseases and not know it.
Right. And we've done a show on hepatitis C, and those that are interested can go to our website and download the podcast and listen in. But with hepatitis A, so once you have the disease, once you know you have it, then there's no sense in getting a vaccine for that. It won't improve your immune system's response to it.
Correct. Once you're ill with it, best thing is rest and fluids and caution not to spread it to anyone else with hand washing.
But then you do review the person's contacts.
Yeah, and this is a good part about by law, physicians have to report this to the health department. You are infectious for a time up until you start to turn yellow and have the symptoms, and then we can go back and say, well, here's the folks that were at risk that were close to you. And it's not in a office setting or a house in a classroom setting. It's more in people who you're very close to, household contacts or somebody you might have prepared food for.
Well, that's a good point. So this is, I mean, being that it's not airborne, it has to be touch. Now, if you have hepatitis A, say, on your fingers and you put your fingers or grab a handle, a doorknob, will that virus stay on that doorknob for a while?
That is, if you wiped yourself after having a bowel movement, and of course that soaks through the toilet paper, and you don't wash your hands, then that's on that doorknob, that thing you touch. Now, if somebody touches that and bites their fingernails,
mm-hmm.
then they've got it in their mouth, and then that's now you're going to get sick.
Okay.
But you can't catch it from saliva. You can't catch mm-hmm. it from handshaking in that sense. It's got to be from having your hands dirtied or soiled.
But if you shake someone's hands who has virus on it,
right, and that's, bottom line, yeah. You didn't wash your hands after having
right.
diarrhea.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the person who has the virus on their hands, as we've discussed, we have a hard break. I hear it. We have a hard break coming, 3 minutes? Okay, I'm hearing the music in the background. 30 seconds, okay. All right, well, in that case, we'll come back and talk more about hepatitis A and other foodborne illnesses. In the meantime, call with your questions, 289-1860, 289-1860 here in Hillsborough County. Outside of the county, toll free, 877-969-8600. Be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Well, the Minnesota Vikings and the New York Giants will be playing football not today, but tomorrow night, and not in Minnesota, but in Detroit. That's because the Metrodome's inflated roof there in Minnesota has collapsed under a snowstorm. The snow just keeps coming. Game originally set for today had to be rescheduled because of the weather. Minnesota just one of the states being hammered by wintry weather today. The National Weather Service posting blizzard warnings for parts of eastern Iowa, southeastern Wisconsin, northwestern Illinois, and northern Michigan, amongst other states. Former National Intelligence Director Dennis Blair says South Korea is losing patience with North Korea and will probably take military action. Blair just back from the Korean Peninsula. He talked to CNN. British police have arrested the son of Pink Floyd guitarist David Gilmour. He was photographed climbing on a war memorial during violent student protests on Thursday. The students don't want their tuition raised. This is SRN News.
Have you heard? The Democrats are revolting.
Don't say that again.
No, not that. I mean revolting against President Obama's deal with Republicans to keep taxes from going up next year.
Mr. President, hold back on this agreement.
But a few Republicans are angry, too.
You just extend our current rates for even 2 years. It doesn't give businesses the time to plan.
Now, more than ever, where do you stand on the deal?
What's the dealio, yo?
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Buying or selling a home or commercial property? Considering building or renovating? Maybe you just need an unbiased professional opinion. Britannia Building Consultants is the answer. BBC Home Inspections have saved clients time, money, and ensured their safety over 20,000 times. BBC aims at delivering exceptional value. There is simply no equal to partnering with BBC. Call our office at any time at 727-446-0110 or visit us on the web at britanniabci.com.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsborough, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today we're talking about hepatitis A and other foodborne illnesses with our guest expert, Dr. Daniel Haight, who is the director of the Polk County Health Department. And he's been there since 1996. He's also associate professor of medicine, infectious disease division, University of South Florida College of Medicine. So We're just about wrapping up the discussion on hepatitis A. Dan, how does a health department investigator report a case of Hep A?
Well, we go in two different directions. So in front of us, we have the sick person. We got to ask two questions. Where did you get it from? Because then we might find other cases. And in hepatitis A, it's a little frustrating because they got it 30 days ago. So do you remember where you were 30 days ago? No, that's very difficult. Then the other direction we go is, where is this disease going? Who did you might expose, and they're going to be sick in 30 days unless something's done about it? So we go in those two different directions. And, of course, if we find someone that has been exposed, we can get them a vaccine before they get sick. And then that's the big payoff for public health. Public health can prevent those hospitalizations, missed days from work by doing those investigations. And we do it for other diseases that are of public health importance.
So hepatitis A, as you indicated a little while ago, is a reportable disease to the health department. That is, a physician's office is obligated to report that.
Absolutely, because if they don't, someone else is going to get sick unnecessarily. And we've seen that happen, unfortunately.
Could you name a few other diseases, for example, that physicians are obligated to report, just so the public gets an idea?
Well, a good example, when we're talking about foodborne diseases, is salmonella. And everyone sort of has known about salmonella and chickens and eggs. But often, you know, a physician may only see the person with symptoms of salmonella and not do the test that proves it. So there's really nothing to report in that case. But when you see two or three or four cases, and we really do encourage local physicians to go get the test. It's not the best test in the world. You're basically testing feces. And you get that, you report it to the health department. We can try to sort out where did it come from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine these are essential to get your arms around, so to speak, so to limit the exposure and disease.
And there's many other diseases like measles and even agents of bioterrorism. You know, we want to make sure that those get reported right away so we can act on it. Like we had that case of anthrax in Florida. That, of course, was an already reportable disease, and that alerted the federal government that we were under attack, and that was a physician who was trained by a health department on recognizing anthrax.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a number of diseases, food-related, things that could spread in school.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk now, let's broaden the discussion out to generally the general topic of foodborne illness. And let's begin with an article that was in the Tampa Tribune over the weekend about cleaning fruits and vegetables. I'm just going to read a little bit of it and ask you to comment. And again, it goes and it says that, you know, recent reports of illness caused by fresh produce have upped awareness of the need to wash before eating. And so each of the basic rules from the U.S. Department of Agriculture is equally important. And these rules are: wash everything, including prepackaged products, even if the label says pre-washed or ready to eat. And so that includes the outer rinds and skins. I guess you can't argue with that.
Oh, absolutely. That's the safest thing to do.
So even if it's pre-washed or ready to eat, wash it again. Number two, use running water. Hold produce under the tap. Turn it continuously to reach all sides. Gently rub soft fruits and vegetables for 30 to 60 seconds.
Exactly. And the only thing I'd caution folks is, as you're doing this to the food, you're manipulating the food to clean it, you just got to be careful of a term we use called cross-contamination, meaning that you might have been working with the chicken earlier that day, and it's raw, and did you really keep those things separately as you're now washing the fruits and vegetables that you're not going to cook?
So you may have salmonella on your fingertips, and now it's on your lettuce.
It might be on the side of the sink, and you might be washing your vegetables and doing a great job with that, and then you laid them down on that same
on
spot,
countertop.
And you didn't disinfect that area, and so you want to make sure that happens.
How long does, say, salmonella or other bacteria lie on a countertop potentially as an infectious?
Every germ is different, and some are hardier than others. They have membranes around them that maybe not last a long time, but they can last long enough, that especially within that day or two that you're preparing food. So you do want to wipe down and disinfect after handling raw foods like eggs and chicken and beef and things like that.
So they can last a couple of days.
Exactly, and I would be extra cautious. And most people are preparing a meal, so it's right there on the spot, and you want to make sure you keep things separated.
How about, what's your view on the sushi and the organic foods that are not cooked? Same thing. Make sure you wash them well and avoid potential contaminated food preparing areas.
Well, some processes, with sushi can prepare a safe product. Other things that are unpasteurized, there are concerns, and you have to really do your homework on those things. Unpasteurized apple cider, for instance. You know, there's been cases of E. coli because the apples have been exposed to, you know, cow manure.
Mm-hmm.
And there you can have you're missing that opportunity to pasteurize the cider and kill that germ. Unpasteurized milk, there's a lot of concerns that if it's not handled properly, you can get illnesses from that.
Mm. So you can get unpasteurized milk commercially?
That has been available, but it's difficult to get, and fortunately so, is that there can be illnesses that can be passed when milk is not pasteurized.
What's your view on organic foods?
Well, those can be raised safely. I mean, there's people who devote a lot of their time to make sure they produce a safe...
Meaning without pesticides.
You know, without a safe and wholesome process that can be safe. But, you know, you need to do your homework to make sure you understand that the organic food you're getting is the safe food.
Mm. And third on the list of how to clean your fruits and vegetables, avoid harsh cleaning agents. Detergents, soaps, and bleaches can seep inside the fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, you know, the stem, for instance, is an area where once that's broken off the plant, that's now an entryway into the fruit. And so if, you know, out in the farm, certainly germs can get in that way if they don't use clean water to wash. And then if you're using chemicals to clean, you might actually be ingesting those. Also, you might degrade if you're not going to eat the fruit or vegetable right away and you're washing it with soap and detergents, you might be degrading that protective covering and that fruit or vegetable is not going to last as long.
So if you're looking for an apple in the grocery store, is it better to see a stem still intact?
No, not necessarily, but, you know, go through the same process of washing it in just water, not anything that has detergent in it, just washing it with water.
And tap water is satisfactory, or is it better to use...
No, tap water is fine.
Tap water is fine. Mm-hmm. And be thorough before washing. Now here it says before washing, cut off stalks and stems, which tend to be very dirty, and remove bruised or damaged spots where bacteria can thrive.
Correct. And now some fruits, for instance, if they were contaminated on the farm, you can wash them, and you're not going to have a lot of success. For example, raspberries. You know, there's certain germs that are very sticky, and you can wash them. And we had an outbreak with raspberries a few years back. A germ called cyclospora. It was sticky, and you could wash the raspberries, but it was placed there back on the farm. It was from another country, and people ended up with chronic diarrhea until they were diagnosed and treated.
Mm.
But washing does help. It does help.
It's just plain water.
Just tap water. Mm-hmm. You're going to be reducing. You're not eliminating all the germs, but you have your own defense system. You have acid in your stomach. You have the ability to fight off infections. We want to make sure you don't get a big dose.
Mm-hmm. And dry it off. Use a clean towel or paper towel to wipe away germs.
Yeah, and drying is the enemy of most germs. Some germs are hardy. They can last on surfaces. But other germs, they like moistness. They like living in a body. They don't like dryness. And so just disinfecting and drying with the tabletop and then with your fruit and vegetables, you know, wash them with tap water and let them and dry them well.
Never skip the water. Blowing and rubbing is not effective.
No, exactly.
You always, you know, see the Huck Finn notion of just grabbing an apple off a tree and rubbing it on your jeans and then start chewing on it. Not a good idea.
Exactly. Not as effective.
Right. Now, foodborne illnesses. Let's talk about that broad area. We talked about obviously a virus. Hepatitis A is a virus. You mentioned salmonella, bacteria. Are there other
parasites? Mm-hmm.
Parasites. So maybe just to give the folks an idea, a feeling of the parasite, what's a common or the most common parasite that one can contract a foodborne illness from?
Well, there was out of Wisconsin, there were 700,000 cases in one time of Cryptosporidium. And that's where it comes out of cow manure, and heavy rains washed it into the Great Lake, and then they had an intake for their drinking water there. And chlorine does not kill that particular germ. You need to filter it out. So when the water became cloudier, they just raised the chlorine level. That didn't work, and over 700,000 people were infected there in that area. And then, fortunately, back at that time, if you had AIDS or HIV to AIDS, it was fatal.
Mm.
So that was a parasite. I mentioned cyclospora and others, amoebas. And some of these are most seen in other countries, but we do see Giardia.
Okay.
And again, these are chronic diarrheas. They don't go away. People often go to the doctor, and there is a test on the stool that looks for parasites if you're having diarrhea. And your doctor will sort out which of these parasites it is, and there's treatments for most of them.
At what point does chronic diarrhea become something that the patient needs to see the doctor? A week?
Well,
2 weeks?
If you're getting along with it, high fevers, blood in your bowel movements, if you're getting dehydrated from the diarrhea, you know, you need
you
to
see
medical attention. You know, some diarrheas right. will get better on their own. And often a doctor may not even treat your diarrhea. If it's been there for a couple of days, often the treatment is no antibiotic, especially if it's a virus, because viruses, like we're trying to teach a lot of parents out there, don't need antibiotics. Other bacteria, they just get better on their own. But the kinds that are making you so sick that you can't get out of bed, you're often, you know, spending more time in the bathroom, need to be tested for and treated with the proper
without
medicine.
Delay. Mm-hmm. If you're getting dehydrated and if there's blood in the stool, I imagine too.
Right, high fever and you know, greater than 3 days worth of diarrhea. Okay. Of course, we're all sort of watching that over in Haiti, that cholera.
Right.
That causes diarrhea that could cause death in just a few hours. And the diarrhea is just that
so
much.
Explosive.
Mm-hmm.
And cholera is considered a bacteria, isn't it?
Yes, that's a bacteria. Fortunately, we have a lot of protections here in the United States that we wouldn't see a cholera outbreak here. It's mainly if your water systems are bad, like, you know, they're drinking from the rivers and things like that. And where's the sewage going? It's going into the rivers. So that's how these infections get carried away in a horrible condition where there's crowding and poor sanitation.
So if a person goes, say, down to Haiti to help out and unfortunately contracts cholera, comes back here to the States, what's the natural course of something like that?
Yeah, and that's already happened. We've had a few people come back to Florida with cholera and, you know, getting them the hydration through either drinking the proper fluids or IV through the vein, and there and some antibiotic can help shorten the course of it. And then because we have good sanitation systems, the diarrhea is getting flushed down a toilet that's treated properly, so then we're not seeing it spread.
Then recirculate through the system.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And now let's just talk about viruses. The famous norovirus.
Yeah, I like to call that. It was a, you know, we see it outbreaks in nursing homes, daycare centers. You might have heard some public one, publicized ones out of cruise ships, you know, where 800 people come down with profuse, explosive diarrhea every 15 minutes with nausea and vomiting. And it comes on pretty fast. It fortunately, you get over it pretty quickly. But to have that knock you out of work, or if you're elderly at a nursing home, it could send you to the hospital because you can't take your pills. You could throw your whole body off. Norovirus. So we do see that. That's what you sometimes see go through an office because it can be spread not through just food, but through touching items, biting your fingernails. Not, you know, if you didn't wash your hands.
Good reason to keep the hands away from the face.
Exactly. And people say it's the stomach flu. I don't like that term. Flu is the flu, and that's a topic for another day. This is a viral gastroenteritis. It affects the stomach and the bowels, vomiting and diarrhea, and norovirus. There's no treatment for it. You get over it on your own, but you can certainly spread it while you're sick.
And that you can get over within 24 hours or so?
Exactly. And the diarrhea is so liquidy. When you're wiping yourself after a bowel movement, it's going to soak through the toilet paper. Trillions of germs are going to be on your fingers if you don't wash your hands after going to the bathroom. Of course, with kids, you know, this is the big thing right. there. And then you go off and you touch things. You know, God forbid that you make the salad, you know, mm-hmm. for, you know,
a large group of people.
Because mm-hmm. you will basically infect them, guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. And, well, the good news there is it is a short-lived virus once it's in your system.
It is short-term, but if you're sort of in a plane flying, you don't really want to have that happen to you. But it's just one of the many. I think there's a total list of over 250 viruses, bacteria, and parasites that can cause food-related or water-related illnesses. And we certainly have food and waterborne cases every year. It's over 70 million cases are estimated. In the United States.
That's in the United States alone.
Yes,
over 70 million a year.
Exactly. And over 300,000 hospitalizations due to these illnesses. And, you know, because everyone's different. Sometimes you can get a food-related illness and not be that sick, whereas your friend might have the same exact illness that you might have given him, and they've got
completely
very
different
sick.
Picture.
Exactly.
It'll depend on genetics. And
mm-hmm.
It's amazing to me that, as you mentioned, 70 million cases a year, but it's amazing that we don't have more foodborne illnesses through restaurants. And we were talking mm-hmm. about, you know, before the show about the layers of protection that exist in the restaurant industry. And before we go there, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more. Call in with your questions 289-1860. That's 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Outside the county, it's 877-969-8600. And we'll be back with more on foodborne illnesses with our guest expert, Dr. Daniel Haight. Be right back.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. The best way to prepare yourself for what's coming up after the midterm election is to subscribe to Town Hall Magazine. Now, more than ever, you'll need Town Hall Magazine's fresh, intelligent reporting to dissect the meaning of the 2010 midterms and how the new landscape will affect the economy, taxes, immigration, and health care in 2011, and set the stage for the presidential elections in 2012. Log on to townhallmagazine.com today. Find out about a very special free bonus with your subscription. Townhallmagazine.com.
This is the Prescription Addiction Radio Show.
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show has been on your Sunday night radio for 4 years. The only radio show in America that is talking about what drugs are doing to our loved ones. How long is business and industry going to remain quiet while the destruction and costs from too many drugs continues to increase?
Sponsored by Novus Medical Detox, Suncoast Rehabilitation Center, and Chamberlain, Butler, and Crowe. Sunday nights at 9 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
For the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a Best Doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010, and as an America's Top Ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We are coming to the end of our hour. We've talked about hepatitis A. We're now talking about foodborne illnesses with our guest expert, Dr. Daniel Haight. And Dr. Haidt is the director of the Polk County Health Department, has been so since 1996. Dan, let's talk about a few practical items that people may be interested in. For example, do you need to cook a steak longer than a hamburger, or vice versa, and why?
Well, you know, any food raw will have germs on it that could make you ill, and cooking will kill them. So in the case of a steak, you know, normally the germs are on the surface. So as soon as that hits the grill, I mean, they're going to be killed pretty quickly by the high heat of the grill. But hamburger, you're grinding out the outside of that steak and internalizing it. So you get a hamburger where what was on the outside is now on the inside. So you got to make sure those hamburgers are cooked all the way through, and you cannot go by the color of the meat. Some beef and hamburger turns brown before it has reached the temperature that has killed the germs. So you cannot go by the color. But, you know, thermometer, just go invest in, you can get reusable thermometers and ones that are disposable, and getting that hamburger to be at least 160 degrees in the center. Whereas a steak, you can get up to 145 and above, unless you tenderize it by sticking, you know, tenderizing needles into it. Then you're basically
back to a ground beef situation.
Yeah, you want to be careful, because we've seen that cause a problem, and we're worried about E. coli, which can cause a diarrhea, and then in a few people cause some serious after effects.
Dan, why is it that more people do not get sick at restaurants? What are some of the barriers, the multiple layers and barriers that are employed to prevent people from getting sick?
Well, the key thing is that the restaurants are required to have training, specifically covering all the things on how diseases spread and how to prevent that. And even more training, because some restaurants have the approval to not use gloves. And I think, that's fine as long as they're having the training. Because sometimes, you know, wearing those plastic gloves are a false sense of security if you're touching other things and not changing the gloves.
So is it up to the restaurant, though, Dan, to decide whether to go with gloves or not gloves?
They have to receive a special approval from the Department of Business and Professional Regulation that they can meet the standards that allows for safe food preparation without gloves, and I think that I'm fine with that, because if you wash your hands, that's an appropriate way.
Okay, so anyone that prepares food for the public needs to either have gloves on or have this waiver, so to speak, from the Department of Public Regulation.
And they need to keep in close communication with the Department of Business Professional Regulation. They can give them the guidelines, and as you as a consumer can always ask questions too. But there's other barriers that are looked at a restaurant. There's very tight temperature controls. Things are not only cooked to the right temperature to kill the germs, but they're also held at the right temperatures before serving. And they're also, if stored, they're stored cold enough. And, of course, hand washing emphasis, not just hand washing in the bathroom, but when you come back out and start in the food prep area, you wash your hands again.
A second time. Mm-hmm.
And then cleaning that equipment. You know, you may make sure everything is sanitized, the surfaces are sanitized. And, you know, they've even did the little experiments out in people's homes where they asked permission to put cameras to watch you prepare your meals at home. And people knowing that they're being watched, they found that at home you can certainly easily make a lot of mistakes that cross-contaminate food and didn't follow all the procedures, you know, properly. And that we see more foodborne illnesses more or less coming from home. But sometimes when you get sick, you sometimes want to blame, well, where did I eat last? And some of these germs incubate for hours to days. And so just because you got sick with diarrhea, it does not mean it was the last meal that you ate. It might have been a meal that might have been 5 meals ago or 3 days ago. It depends on the germ. Mm-hmm. So you can't always assume it was the last meal you made or the last restaurant you ate at. It might have been your home-cooked meal,
right,
you know, 3 days ago, or the church picnic from, you know, from that weekend.
We've been talking a lot about diarrhea as a symptom, but could one not be nauseous and vomiting as opposed to diarrhea?
Oh, absolutely. You know, potato salads can have certain germs in it that leave a toxin behind, and you'll start vomiting within an hour or two. Other germs, will hit you more with vomiting. And then some will get you both. They'll get you vomiting first, and then after a few hours, you'll start with the diarrhea. And it depends on the germ.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have just about a minute left. And, Dan, I'd like you, if you would, provide a couple of take-home points for our listeners, take-home messages, things that people can consider going forward.
Certainly with hepatitis A, there's a vaccine that prevents it. We've seen a 92% drop in United States hepatitis A cases since the vaccine came out in 1995. So if you're a traveler or if you have a liver disease like cirrhosis, you really should look into these vaccinations. And especially when you travel, there are other things you need to look out for. Most health departments have a traveler's clinic. So if you're going international, get some good advice before you go. You don't want to get malaria or dengue fever from mosquitoes. You want to learn about those things. Mm-hmm. And there's good websites out there. And then for food preparation, make sure you have all those barriers, that you wash their food, wash your hands, and if you're sick, don't be working around food to try to avoid that.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much, Dan. And next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, we'll be talking about a devastating disease, Stevens-Johnson syndrome. It's idiopathic. We don't know, or one could not predict whether one has a risk of developing it. It's been described as burning from the inside out, frequently in reaction to virus or medications. We'll be talking with Dr. Dennis Ledford on that next Sunday. In the meantime, have a great and healthy week. This is Dr. Steve Maskin signing off. See you next week.
Yeah, just I saw.
Last year, about this time, Jim and Mary Johnson made a resolution to never be broke again. They made some serious decisions to take their future into their own hands. Today, they are enjoying some of the financial blessings that they had been praying for. Hi, I'm Andy Willoughby. Happy holidays from the Three-Step Plan. Jim and Mary started a home business with the Three-Step Plan. They've worked hard, and their business has truly been blessed. They work mostly on the telephone and the internet. They have developed many new relationships with some really great people. They not only improved their bottom line, but now they're helping others, and they really enjoy that. For information, go to 3stepplan.com or call 888-366-5258. You too can have a better next year. With the 3-Step Plan, you'll get the training and support you need to make your business successful. To find out how you can make more money working from home, go to 3stepplan.com or call 888-366-5258.
Your choice for intelligent talk. Talk Radio 860 WGUL, Dunedin, Tampa Bay, a service of Salem.